In 1974, photojournalist Cornell Kappa gave up taking pictures to devote himself to showing and preserving the work of what he describes as concerned photographers. He founded the International Center of Photography in New York, which has become the nation's premier gallery for photojournalism. Kappa's brother, the esteemed war photographer Robert Kappa, was killed on assignment in Indochina in 1954. Cornell Kappa is a former Life magazine photographer and a former president of the photographers' collective Magnum, which Robert co-founded in 1947. An exhibition of the work of Magnum photographers is touring the country and is currently on view at the two galleries of the ICP. A companion photography book called In Our Time has just been published by Norton. I asked Cornell Kappa to elaborate on his expression, concerned photographers.
This has been bugging me for about 155 years. Photographers who just take images of being beauty or being decorative, et cetera, is one kind of a thing. But when you try to educate people, you're trying to change social conditions, to confront people with what life is all about and try to change their mind or try to influence them, is what a concerned photographer would do.
Tell me why you stopped taking photographs yourself.
Well, the major point, of course, is that I couldn't find a place for photography of some urgency to be shown in New York City, for one. Okay. Nobody really collected photographs. Nobody really collected negatives. Nobody had preservation notions because there was no place and no money for any of that. And I felt that there had to be a place for collecting, for preserving, for presenting photographs so that we can have a bank of our past history and all the rest of it. So, in order to have that happen, I started an institution that would be dedicated to what we're talking about.
And that left no time to do your own photographs?
Oh, my God. I mean, seven days and seven nights it took to create an institution, what we did in the last 15 years. It was a fantastically pressing, difficult, overwhelming occupation.
Let me ask you a few questions about the days when you were taking photographs. Now, your brother Robert Kappa was a famous war photographer.
Right.
Now, you never went in that direction yourself. I was wondering if that had to do with the fact that your brother was already doing that, or if your sensibility and your temperament was one that made war photography the wrong occupation for you.
Well, first of all, we are separated in time. He was involved in photography from 1931 to 1954, when he died in Indochina. He stepped on an anti-personnel mine and he died there. And my photography really began in 1947 when I joined Life Staff. He lived in a wartime world. I lived in a peacetime world. His concerns for humanity were the same as mine, but he did it at a different time period under different pressures. So, number one, I did not have the notion at all to be one war photographer in the family was more than plenty. So I had no ambition at all to be a second war photographer. And our times were different, and my sensibility of social concern was for about old age, retarded children, et cetera, and a different direction in photography.
Mm-hmm. Did you used to worry about his safety when he was a war photographer?
Well, not really. My mother was the one who was tremendously concerned about his safety, as mothers do that. Since I was also in the army and all that, my feelings about war and my fears and all the rest of it were quite different. And of course, one more thing which was very strong with us, Bob had great amount of courage and luck and capacity to survive. And as a very experienced adventurer. He one gave him the benefit of safety. Obvious, he's going to survive. So the interesting thing, what you're getting at, of course, beyond that, he was a gambler with whatever he did all the time. My father was a gambler, but my father gambled differently from Bob about their own betting on something, on themselves, kind of a way. Bob estimated his chances, gauged his chances of how to deal with the situation when he was endangered. And he did extremely well. He didn't, practically had no scratch on him from 1931 to 1954 until his death. The one thing that bothered him, one thing that he feared, is a mine which was buried. You could not see it. You couldn't estimate what it would mean to you. As it turned out, that's one that got him eventually.
Mm-hmm. How did you first start taking pictures?
Oh, I was a very lucky fellow. Born in Budapest, Hungary. My brother was one of the young students who rebelled against Admiral Horthy, the regime of Admiral Horthy. And he was one of those students that you see on the streets of Prague today.
Mm-hmm.
And he had to leave Hungary under some very urgent reasons of giving him a chance to get out before they put him to jail. So he went to Berlin in 1931, and then Hitler came to Berlin, so he had to leave again, and he ended up in Paris. And in Paris, now we get into the rest of the story, of course. The 35-millimeter camera, Leica, was invented in 1931 in Germany. And it gave a whole new impetus to see the world through a small camera which you could use it as your memory, as your eyes, and you could move with it. You did not become a press photographer with a big camera, with a tripod, with a magnesium light. And he had a Leica. He met his friend Henri Cartier-Bresson, a Frenchman. He met his friend Shim, a Polish exile in Paris. And the three of them started to look at the world through the camera, and they contributed to magazines, and magazines printed their stories, their picture stories, and eventually they went to Spain and did some other things, which became the war coverage, war correspondence. Life magazine was born, Picture Post in England was born, and Match magazine in Paris was born. The whole age of photojournalism came upon us. A mass circulation picture magazine was born. So when I went to Paris to join my brother, I met these two other fellows, and three of them and me, we got involved with photography. I got involved through them.
Mm-hmm.
Then eventually, let me make the next jump. World War II occurred, started out, and the three guys, Cartier-Bresson, Frenchman, Shim, Paul, my brother Bob, they all met in 1947 in Paris again, and they became unemployed war photographers, so they decided to do a cooperative they wanted to cooperate themselves, and they created an agency of photojournalists. Who they were, unemployed, who they were, and Magnum was born.
Well, you were the president of Magnum from 1956 to 59. What kind of independence do you think that this photography collective gave to photographers that they didn't have before?
Well, before Magnum was born, there was no cooperative of photographers who owned their own fate, their own destiny. It was a whole new idea. It's not the Associated Press. It is not a Black Star. It is not an agency owned and run by an owner. This group of people joined as collaborators, as an international cooperative. And it was a whole new idea. They would own their own pictures. They have their own copyright. They would be controlling their own product. They would make their own prints. They would create their own captions. And they would try to enforce their own position, their own point of view in their photographs and in the captions that accompanied them. They would feed the world press with their own work. The whole revolutionary new idea. And of course, that has been going on for 40 years now, with ups and downs, success and failure, their own success, their own failure, and they have affected the rest of the world, because now there are many, many more press agencies who are doing a similar affiliations like Magnum is.